Welcome back to Day de Botarda Party Line Talk Show. I'm your host, Luann Stacy, and joining me today are Jessica Ostreich from KSES, and we also have Lauren McCumber, who's in sharing her story and her reality in terms of, beating sobriety and living a life that's, you know, healthier and cleaner in terms of using substances or whatever you would want to call it. So I guess we were talking about youth, and we were making some interesting points, and maybe you could share a little bit, because I think they're important points.
Right. So I don't, for anybody who's been listening to the shows regularly, one of the themes, at least in the studio, that we've noticed is, you know, this sort of magical number, you know, age 14 for people who start drinking at that age, you know, they start experimenting. And we did mention we had one guest who had already been drinking when he was younger, but he turned 14 and that's when he started using, you know, harder drugs. So there's, you know, this sort of age range where a lot of times when we're working in prevention, we hear people saying, you know, oh, well, you know, kids are too young to be learning about that stuff.
Yeah.
But if they're starting to experiment at age 14, we really want them to be familiar with these substances and the consequences of using those substances well before that age, right? So yeah. 14, when should we start talking to them about it?
Absolutely. You know, and that's
grade
the
five,
question.
Grade six, and parents, you got to start talking to your kids about this well before their teenage years, because you want them to know what these substances are, know what the effects of these substances are, but also know, you know, the root of why these substances might make them feel different ways, why they might enjoy different substances, why they might like the feeling of not having feelings anymore. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's really about having those honest conversations with your kids when they're young, not waiting
into early teens, you know, because adolescence isn't an easy time in kids' lives, no matter who it is. Some people go through, have no problems. Other people, it's turbulent, you know. Mm-hmm. It's such a changing from childhood to adulthood. So sometimes, substances being readily available will make it easier for some. So, you know, that's the reality. So back to our guest. But I thought it was an important point that we needed to share. As an adult now, Lauren, when you look back at that time in your life when you started to drink and use substances, what was the attraction? Like, what was it? You talked about the importance of your grandmother, and I think that's key, because that woman had a profound effect in almost everybody in the whole community. So, mm-hmm. You know, you have to keep that in mind, too.
So, What was the attraction to start drinking?
Or to the lifestyle, like to really getting into it, because it didn't seem to faze you when you were younger. You know, you tried, it was, you know.
Yeah. Okay. I guess the attraction of it. Oh, okay. I see what you're getting.
Yeah, okay.
I get it. The light bulb just went on. I really, like, looking back now, the attraction for drinking was to escape. It really was to escape all of the pressures of being a young adult, because, you know, a lot of responsibilities come with that too. You know, I just started university. My grandmother passed a month and a half, 2 months later into that. I was living on my own, paying bills, working part-time. It was really stressful. And those are some realizations that I had just seeing some posts that people would make on Facebook. You know, it would click with me that it was really just a way to escape from all of the stress. And I really think young adults are overworked these days, and that drinking acts as an easy way to escape those pressures in life. So that was definitely one of the attractions, you know, to escape. Another attraction was to fit in, you know, like I felt like I found a group of people that I fit in with, and it revolved around drinking and going to concerts and
parties
and heavy Montreal and metal shows, and it was fun, you know, like I really did have a good time. But the issue is that instead of dealing with the deep pain that I had from my grandmother's passing, instead I was numbing it, right, with this magic potion every weekend. And sometimes I just you know, I didn't know who I was going to be. Sometimes I was the life of the party. I was the person having the most fun. And then other times I would be hit by sadness or I would be hit by anger. That's sort of when I started to I'm probably jumping ahead, but that's when I started to realize that maybe there was an issue.
Okay.
But, you know, there's a lot of denial attached to that, that you have an issue with drinking.
And I guess while we're here, what would a typical week look for you? Was it just weekends? Was it just parties? Was it, you know, like the pattern? What's the pattern of?
Yeah, yeah. At first, it was literally just once a weekend. You know, like for me, it was manageable. And then it sort of started turning into, this was after my grandmother passed, maybe a year and a half later, it started turning into like, you know, maybe going out to dinner with a couple of friends and having a few drinks and then, oh, I'm drunk. and then it turned into going out on weird nights, like a Sunday night or like a Wednesday night. And that's when I was like, well, this can't be bad, can it? but that's sort of like a tip off that maybe, you know, something's not quite right here.
So you started experiencing your own signals that for you that it wasn't...
That something wasn't right about it. And then... anyways, I'll let Jessica jump in.
Sorry. But I was just wondering, typically, how many drinks would you have a night?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. It depends on where I was. You know, if I was having a house party, less, because the alcohol isn't watered down, in all honesty. But if I was out at a bar, like, I could have, like, 8 shots and 10 mixed drinks, you know?
And I'm only asking that question because, you know, when we talk about low-risk drinking habits, right? So for women, it's 2 drinks a day, right?
Right.
A maximum of 10 a week. And you're supposed to have as many like non-consecutive days of alcohol consumption as possible.
Because if not, then it stays in your system.
Right. But, you know, the idea of somebody going out and having just 2 drinks is, you know, and saying that's your low risk number. It's kind of counterintuitive, I think, for a lot of people, especially if your whole sort of social circle, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have anybody in your social circle who's just having 2 drinks for women and 3 drinks for men and then calling it a night, right? So what we consider low risk, right? So 10 a week is your maximum. That doesn't mean that you can have 10 all in one night.
Right.
That's no longer low risk anymore. You're putting yourself at high risk, not just for injuries, you know, from inebriation, but it puts a lot of strain on the rest of your body and even increases your risk of developing certain cancers substantially. So, you know, last time I was on, we were talking about how we have a lot of people in the community who abstain from alcohol completely, which is great. But on the flip side of that, we have a lot of people who binge drink.
Drink, yeah.
Right? So it's only on the weekends, but it's way more than the healthy limits. So back to Lauren.
It's okay. Because like for me, I'm, you know, as I go further and further on my path of sobriety, I just sort of wonder like what exactly is abuse? What exactly is addiction? There's no real, it's very black and white, you know, there's no real measuring stick that I've ever encountered. So it's interesting to hear what you have to say so that people can sort of use that as a way to base their consumption. Like, am I abusing? Am I not abusing?
Right. And there's different ways we talk about addiction too. You know, there are really clinical definitions, but there's a lot of like smaller details to that where it's like, well, do you meet this category and this category? And, you know, is it physical addiction or are we talking about psychological addiction? When is it, you know, a substance abuse disorder? And which can be really confusing for people, you know, just listening to it, because at the end of the day, when you're at the point of questioning, you know, is this a healthy part of my life or not? Those labels tend to just be more confusing than helpful sometimes. So, you know, I always look at it as terms of function.
Exactly.
Right? How is this, functioning in your life in a way that's positive, right? Is it helping you? Or is it starting to get in the way of everyday function or, you know, weekly function even?
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of what it came down to where I realized I was coming to work like hungover, you know, and I wasn't doing my best as I should have been. But that was also the other part of it too, is that really did sort of trouble me during my my sobriety, like what exactly is sober? Did I have an addiction? You know, so I even went online and did like this survey and it said that I wasn't an addict, but that I was on the verge of becoming one. So for me, like the piece that I have with it is that, you know, I wasn't an addict. I didn't have physical, reactions. You know, I didn't need to have a drink every day. I didn't have cravings or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. For me, it was more like a dependency, to help me cope with emotions, to help me, be more sociable, because I do have anxiety. So it helped with that, like social anxiety. And the other thing too, is that like, I've sort of come to the conclusion that I was abusing alcohol. That's basically what it was. I was just abusing alcohol. Mm-hmm. And everybody's different. Everybody has a different story, a different definition. Would I call myself even sober? You know what I mean? Like one of the questions is here, like, how do you manage your sobriety now? One of the ways that I would cope is because I was still going out with friends now and then, and if they would have a drink that I used to drink, I would ask them, it's really silly, but I would ask them if I could smell it. Sometimes I would ask, could I have a little sip? And, you know, does that mean that I can call myself 4 years sober because I had a little sip? I wasn't gulping. I was literally taking the tiniest sip just to get that taste so that I could say, okay, I had it and I'm good. I don't know.
Move on.
Yeah, move on. And that worked for me. For some reason, that worked for me. Mm-hmm. But because of that, can I call myself 4 years sober? You know, like it gets kind of dicey when you look at it in black and white. But like you were saying, it's all about the lifestyle. Like, is this working for you or is it not? And for me, that was fine. Having a tiny sip, like once in a blue moon, was okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you still do that? Or no, as you become more? And that's an important question, because I think that becomes part of it. You know, the less that you need to be able to use it or whatever, it's like a weaning off kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know?
And for me, it was more like, just as long as I'm not getting drunk, I'm fine. Let's just put it that way, okay? As long as I am managing my emotions and my life in a positive way and not escaping from it using alcohol, like, I am good. I am good, and that's a healthy lifestyle for me.
And I think that's important. I think that's something we've tried to do in bringing in different guests, was to say that for different people, it's different kinds of things, right? And different strategies that work, or different points of where someone's gotten to.
And it's also, you know, knowing yourself, right?
So absolutely.
When, you know, we talk to our guests who are coming on, like, they've really looked back on their lives and they've thought about themselves and, you know, their patterns and behaviors, you know. So like our last guests, you know, when Dan was in,
yeah,
right, it was like, no, you can't, he couldn't have any.
Yes, and he knew that.
And he knew it.
Yeah.
You know? And in a lot of ways, the more you learn about yourself, it becomes a little more comforting. You know, you know how to set your limits. Yeah. You know how to really manage how to function in your everyday life.
Yep, very true. Yep. Like for me, I know if I have a drink, I don't know what's going to happen. So, you know, I'm fine with just...
And it doesn't bother you anymore.
Yeah, no. Actually, when you asked that question, I was like, no, actually, I don't even go out anymore. I don't even put myself in those situations, because it's just not my thing anymore. Like, I find the hardest part about overcoming quitting drinking is letting go of your drinking buddies, you know, the social scene. And there's nothing against, I hold nothing against the people that I used to drink with. They're all wonderful people. And they probably don't have had problems like I did, so they can continue enjoying it. But for me personally, I just had to remove myself from that, because I find that's what kept drawing me back into it, or wanting to be a part of it, or you know, I really struggle around the holidays or times that, because I used to throw parties, so you know, I always used to have like a back to school party.
Halloween, yeah, that was
big,
yeah.
One. Yeah. Oh man, I missed my Halloween parties. That was such, like, it felt like an identity thing being robbed from me, you know, not to have a Halloween party. But yeah, it was just about cutting that out. And now I'm at the point where, like I said, I don't need to go out. I don't even need to go to concerts, or I don't know. And I just can't explain it. I'm just in a very different place in my life. It's just like a 180. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask what changed it? What was it that turned you into really thinking about this?
Well, I mean, looking at one of your questions, was there a point where things got out of control?
Yes.
And, you know, there was a lot of points that it was out of control, for sure. But the real defining moment was, I think it was January 2014, a couple of weeks or a week before I quit, where I went out for someone's birthday party and I got drunk. Okay, fine. And then I went out the next night for another person's birthday party and I felt like my arm was being twisted. You know, come out, Lauren, come out. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, the only way that I can pull this off is to get drunk. So I got drunk just to get through this birthday party. Died the next day, and then Super Bowl Sunday comes, and, you know, I'll come to this football party. I'm like, okay, I'll have like a couple of drinks, but I'm mostly going to eat. It's the end of the night now, and I'm like on my fifth drink, and I'm like, really? Like, really? Like, did you really need to drink this much? So that sort of sparked this whole thing where, okay, well, I'm going to stop drinking. Just, I'm going to take a break. And then from there, I kind of reconnected with a very spiritual part of myself. It was just, I can't even explain it. It all just happened at the right time. I can't really go into much detail about it, but the right things happened at the right time, which allowed something else to happen, which allowed something else to happen. I know I'm being very vague. I'm sorry, but that's just
the way it is. But that's okay. Our last guest had the same thing, and that was one of the things that were mentioned by a lot of our guests, is once they made the decision to do something, doors were opening, and then as they did something, something else came along. And the same thing. I'm sitting here, you know, I could see their faces as they were telling the story.
Yeah.
That things started to click. And I guess that's the stuff we, you know, would want people to know, you know, that it changes, and the changes can be good. And it's like one after another, you know?
Yeah. For me, it was on a spiritual level. I think soon after that, I even I decided to go back to school for social work at the First Nations Technical Institute, and it was kind of the last minute decision, and I proposed it to K103 because I was still working at K103, and then they gave me the decision, like, well, you either stay here full time or you go back to school. And it was really interesting because I was like, well, no, I'm going back to school. I was very shocked at myself, and I struggled a lot that first year of just not having like a steady part-time job, and just really thankful for the people who helped me out during that transition. Just from there, everything just, I can't explain it. It's just, those doors kept opening and I kept walking through them. And then I found myself doing my stage for my social work program in my second year, and I decided to learn how to do Reiki, and that really was a game changer for me.
Okay, we worked our way to a break. We'll take a little break and then we'll be right back.